you hear that music, you know what time it is. It's time for David, the Man of God Harris's Winners and Losers. We're going to give you a double dose, though, this week because he missed it last week. So we'll have last week's winners and losers plus this week's winners and losers here on 88.3 WXGT's After Further Review. We've got David, the Man of God Harris, on the phone lines. David, what's up, man?
Not much. It's recording on a Sunday, so get a little bit of football in the midst of it, but yeah, this has been a crazy to just football in general.
And that is totally true. So start us off with your winners and losers from the previous week. I know this week, though, in college football, a former UT coach had a big winning week this week. First, we'll start with last week.
Yeah, last week, we have, of course, we have to start off with, and I, even though they got blown out by Alabama, we have to give a shout-out to Vanderbilt University, who, if you listen closely during the broadcast of that game, Vanderbilt actually played Nucky V. Buck in the stadium, and surprisingly, there were no fights, which, let's just be honest, not a lot of black people down at Vanderbilt University, because usually Nucky V. Buck is, all right, somebody's getting at least four punches thrown.
Yeah, that is. It's considered one of the top fight songs in the club. I saw that on the internet. It was one of the top 10 fight songs in the club. If you heard that song, you knew a fight was going down. So I guess in a sense, we should probably give them applause for that one, because I'm going to do that for them right now. Here we go. There you go, right here. As we turn the music up real quick. But yeah, if you play Nuck If You Buck and there's no fight, you get a round of applause for that.
Yeah, which surprisingly, usually, well, one, I didn't think Vanderbilt would play Nuck If You Buck, period. So that in itself is a winner, just hearing that in a college football stadium.
Right. Edited so, version, yeah, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know. I would be surprised if Nuck If You Buck played in the Glass Bowl. I think a lot of people would be surprised. But yeah, at one of the premier institutions, just not for football, but just academically, Nuck If You Buck, I mean, that takes some guts to play that song.
Yeah, that is true. You're right, David. I'll keep going, though.
All right, we're going to give a shout-out to Georgia. Just the way that they dominated both this week and last week against Mississippi State. Just this team looks like it could be a top 10, top 5. Could they possibly make the playoff? Could they possibly give Alabama some problems? I mean, they have stout lines on both the offensive and defensive side of the ball. You got an elite running back in Nick Chubb. You got your quarterback play where it's not we're going out there to lose it, but it's more, hey, you can trust him to get the ball. And they're playing sound on both sides of the ball. So, I mean, a lot of people going into the season was, okay, it's either Florida or Georgia that's going to lose to Alabama on the SEC championship game. But, I mean, Georgia could give Alabama a run for the money. So that'll be interesting to see.
I want one of our coaching staffs at St. John's. We have a Tennessee fan there, and I told him George is going to Rickroll you guys. He kind of didn't believe me, but I would like to see that. That's one thing I would say is that I don't like watching Alabama football. I guess in a sense this would be my loser of the week. You know, no, not trying to take over your segment, David, but it's boring. They all go in there and they blow out every team. The game's usually over by the first quarter. Just to put this out here, this past Saturday was probably some of the best college football I've seen in a long, long time, in multiple games, excluding the Ohio State and the Alabama games. But I would like to see in the SEC Georgia really give it to Alabama. Alabama needs some competition. I mean, everyone thinks that the SEC is good because of Alabama, but it's like Alabama and everybody else. And it's just, to me, it's almost becoming like women's college basketball, where UConn is the dominant team and it's starting to get boring. Now, even though South Carolina won the national championship this year with Dawn Staley and crew, for a while there, when you get a team that's just too dominant, you start to lose interest. Am I right, David?
Yeah, just a little bit. But I think it's also, if you look at the SEC, outside of yesterday's game against Texas A&M, there really isn't any quote-unquote, significant roadblocks, per se. And so it is, it's almost like you're playing against, like, professional players or, like, 8 or 9, 10 teams, like, guys deep, just because Alabama's just that dominant. And it would be nice for them to have at least someone to give them a good run for their money.
Yeah.
Like, Alabama just can't keep doing this to everybody, like, every season, year in and year out.
You know, and some,
that's just not fair.
Sumlin, with what's-his-face in Texas A&M, they want to see him fired, and he's the only coach that's really been that competitive against Alabama, even though they won 27-19. But think about it. Last week, Alabama pretty much crushed Ole Miss. I mean, if you're going in there and you're just giving guys the business like that, that's just sad. And like I said, I'm going to come up with some of these scores here. Like, look at this. You know, against FSU, they won 24-7, which wasn't a bad game, obviously, but Francois was out. Fresno, 41-10. 41-23 over Colorado State. Vanderbilt 59, zilcho. Ole Miss 66-3. Now think about it. Florida State, Colorado State, and Fresno almost gave a better game than Vanderbilt and Ole Miss, and SEC is supposed to be the better conference, quote unquote, as I put air quotes in there.
Well, and I'm going to mention Ole Miss as a kind of loser when just looking at the SEC overall, but I mean, if you really watch that Ole Miss-Alabama game, like, Ole Miss quit, like, in the second half defensively.
Yeah, they called
like,
uncle.
As a defensive unit, like, they were just like, you know what? Screw it. Alabama can play whoever they want. And really, in that fourth quarter, Alabama were throwing out two freshmen, like, fifth-year seniors, guys that don't normally get burned, and they're out there just dominating. Like, Ole Miss had zero heart in that second half against Alabama, and I'll be the first one to say it. Like, if I get flacked, so what?
Well, look at this. The schedule gets easier. I mean, they're at home against – their next three games are at home against Arkansas, Tennessee, and LSU. Pretty much all dumpster fires in the SEC. They've got problems. I mean, look at LSU. They lost to Troy last week, which I'm pretty sure is going to be one of your losers. But for C here, Tennessee getting rickrolled by Georgia. In Arkansas, you know, Bielema, you know, he lost to Toledo a couple years ago. I mean, it looks like there'll be another three straight wins, and then they go to Mississippi State, and then obviously in the middle of November, the SEC always has that sacrificial lamb game where they play Mercer.
Yeah, so I think, and we said when we did our SEC previews, I was quick to say Alabama's just going to run the gauntlet, and we'll see you in January.
True.
Because that really essentially is what Alabama is every year. All right, maybe they'll have one close game, maybe two, couple scares here or there. But we all know that Alabama's just going to find a way to win.
Right. Keep going.
And so last week, the game in London, I'm going to give a winner to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Not last week, but when the Jaguars were in London. They found a way. Like, it seems like Jacksonville, whenever they go across the pond, they're undefeated. They've never lost. You know, like, I don't know what it is about Jacksonville going to London and playing. Maybe that's their calling card. That would be their ace in the hole if they ever moved from Jacksonville, because fans really don't go to Jacksonville all that much for football. But yeah, I got to give Jacksonville some love. And of course,
they go there for the pool.
Yeah. I mean, you're really going to Jacksonville for the pool. Like, I mean, like, granted, I know the football is really not that great. But, I mean, like, the festivities. Like, it says something when the festivities are more important than the actual football, than the actual game.
Well, when you put a poor product on the field, I mean, that's what you got to resort to is gimmicks. I mean, once again, I understand it's sports, but at the same time, though, it's also entertainment. So you got to entertain the fans some way.
Yeah, well, I mean, after this week's game, and of course, we're going to see the Jags and Steelers in upcoming edition of Winners and Losers. But, I mean, they have a young team, and we've been saying this for a couple of years now. Just if they can stay healthy, this team is good. Like, this team is dangerous, and that defense, as the Steelers found out today, that defense is good. Like, they're elite. Well, not elite, but they have the potential to be elite, I would say.
All right, keep going.
All right, those are the winners, the losers. field goal kickers, and we'll come back to them in this exhibition. Like there were several field goals that were missed from within 30 yards. And as Dominique Foxworth said this week, as a kicker, you don't have to block a wide receiver. You don't have to run with a 4-3 wide receiver or block a 300-pound lineman. All you got to do is just kick the ball. Like, just one job. Whether in college or the pros, you just have one job, and that's to kick the football. And, I mean, Youngwick, the kicker from San Diego, got cut because, you know, he couldn't do his job. He couldn't do the one job. I mean, the situation in Tampa Bay where we saw in Thursday Night Football, Nick Folk missing three field goals and, like, shanking them, like, egregiously. Like, field goal kicking has been, I don't know what it is, if it's just something in the water. This is not looking good in terms of people trying to give kickers respect and saying, oh, they're football players too. Like, you can't go out there and say, hey, we want respect, but then you're missing, quote-unquote, chip shot.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that one. I kind of feel bad, though, for the kickers, and this is why. Because they look at you as the kicker. Your jersey's always clean, but the game is pretty much decided by your foot. If you're missing extra points and you're not making field goals, it basically turns the momentum around, and it can pretty much have a team lose a crucial game, but you're not out there. It's like you're almost not out there really making a total effect on the game. Obviously, the quarterback's in there all the time, you know, linebackers, whoever. But it's pretty much a pressure-filled position where when you get in there, you got to perform. And if you're not performing, you're going to get cut. Now, obviously, almost all the NFL teams only have one kicker on the team. So, obviously, if you don't perform, they're going to go out on the street and find another guy. So, I don't know. I mean, Janikowski's been doing it year in and year out. But it does seem like recently, in the last few years, you don't have those Hansons or Dawsons or Murrays that are, you know, famously, or Robbie Goulds that have been just consistent kickers for double-digit years. Now it seems like these kickers get in there, and I don't know, maybe it's a mind thing, but it seemed like a lot of inconsistency in the kicking game recently in college and in the NFL.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because, again, a lot of people look at the kickers and say, oh, you know, you're the team that, or you're the position that we have to rely on when it comes close. We need you to kick a 40-yard, 45-yard, 50-yard field goal. But if you can't make the chip shots, they're going to be like, hey, we'll just throw it and try to get you closer. But then even that's not a guarantee that you'll make it. So it's been a tough season for field goal kickers so far, and it's only a month in. And I imagine it's only going to get worse.
All right, keep going, David.
And the last loser from last week is Florida State. And I don't know if it's because DeAndre Francois went out and their offense, like, they don't know how to run their offense without him, kind of, and the ability that he has. But that offensive unit for Florida State just doesn't look good. And I know it's a, you know, redshirt freshman who I swear I really think was a high school, like, wide receiver that couldn't catch the ball, so now they're like, hey, just throw the ball because you're tall and fast. But Florida State has some cause for concern. I know this past weekend against Miami, they were in a kind of close nail-biter game, and rivalry game, you kind of throw records out the window. But Florida State needs to find a way to turn this around, because if whenever DeAndre Francois leaves, you still have to rely on that guy. And the way that offense looks, I don't know if I can trust them, much less in a bowl game, just to get some kind of upset. I know they lost to Clemson already. They lost to Miami. So now it's more of kind of the teams that are ahead of them, they're quote-unquote supposed to be. But I don't know if they can. Now, Florida State's a pretty good squad.
I don't know, David. I think with Francois out, Florida State has looked just horrid. I mean, now this past Saturday they looked really great against Miami, but then again, though, it's a rivalry game, and anything can happen in the rivalry games. But it just looks like that the teams are just pretty much night and day, David. I don't know. I think Florida State, unfortunately, obviously, Miami, you know, won the game on a late, you know, scoring drive. But I think this might be a year where you just put it in the dumpster.
Well, and I think that's probably the mentality that a lot of Florida State fans probably have is just, hey, we'll just chalk this one up, play most of our young players. But, I mean, coming into the season, a lot of people were saying, hey, if Florida State can be that team that, one, challenged Clemson, but, two, if they can beat Clemson, their, quote-unquote, road to the ACC championship game and possibly a playoff, like, is set for them. But now you get teams like North Carolina State that gave them trouble and were able to beat them. A team, you know, like, I don't know if they'll even have a .500 record at the end of this year. And, I mean, Jimbo Fisher's been there long enough, so, like, that's cause for concern. Like, I'm not saying Jimbo's going to lose his job, but, yeah, the seat's starting to get a little warm down there in Tallahassee.
I don't know. Jimbo Fisher, how long has he been there? Since 2009 or 2010? He's pretty much resurrected the program because the program was down for a while. So I don't think he's going to be on the hot seat. I think a lot of people can realize that, you know what, you're losing your starting quarterback. You're playing a decent schedule. They'll give you the benefit of the doubt. Now, I think if you have a really talented team, it's kind of like, and you're not winning, then it starts to be he's not really coaching up the talent he has. But I think this is one of those years where it's an anomaly. Francois was, you know, you had high expectations, but then Francois goes out. I mean, pretty much, you know, as everyone knows, football's like a quarterback sport. I mean, you know, you lose that guy, that's pretty impactful on any team. So I think he might get a mulligan for this year. Now, over the next couple of years, Florida State is being basically basic or average in the ACC, then I think maybe the seat will warm up.
I mean, I don't know, just kind of harking back to when we did our prediction, like two out of the three of us who did a prediction said that the ACC was the worst Power Five.
Well, yeah, it is. But you lost your quarterback, though, Dave. I could see if they had Francois and they were struggling like this, I would say, what's going on down in Florida State? But you can tell the team is totally night and day without Francois. It's just like, oh, my Lord. I'm actually surprised that they actually stayed in the game against Miami, because for a while there, wasn't Miami up like 10-3 and they just couldn't muster anything on offense? I mean, it just looks like they're just stuck in park.
Yeah, I mean, and Miami is, you know, on the quote-unquote come up, but yeah, Miami is a solid team, and as us in Toledo know, if once they get going, they're pretty hard to stop. They can put up points.
Right, true. All right, David, now on to this week.
All right, this week, winners, losers, of course, you have to give a shout-out to Troy for beating LSU. You can't say that enough. LSU deserve to lose it. Like, especially when it's your homecoming, you can't go out there and get embarrassed like that. And shout-outs to also the social media for the Troy football team, you know. You said, hey, thanks for inviting us to your homecoming. We had a great time. Like, epic trolling from Troy after getting the victory. But that's a landmark win in that program.
That is very a landmark. What do you think, real quick, about Ed Orgeron, a defensive guy, calling the offensive plays, though, even though he brought in, I believe it was Callahan, who is, like, I've heard, is an offensive genius as his offensive coordinator, but Orgeron was the guy calling the plays most of that game. I mean, what happened? Was it just they overlooked Troy and was like, we're just going to try some stuff? And why is it that LSU can't really recruit a quarterback? I mean, that's just a head-scratcher.
Yeah, I think with the first question, it is interesting to figure out defensive coaches who are calling plays like off from the side of the ball, kind of taking that power in their hands. You have a similar situation where you have defensive coordinator / head coach at Vanderbilt. But it's weird just kind of when you have a defensive guy, and we talk about it in the NFL all the time, kind of a defensive coach who's a head coach, like, and you see the offense struck. And, yeah, what those kind of out of conference games or non-conference games, you are essentially just playing. They're trying to get your guys reps, seeing what works, doing some trickeration plays for later in the season for the conference game. But in terms of LSU and needing a quarterback, they haven't had a quarterback Christian Marcus Ross. Like, that's saying something.
Yeah, like, that was over a decade ago, and the name Jamarcus. Oh, I'll give him this. Was he an NFL bust? Yes. But in college, he was doing his thing. I believe, didn't Jamarcus Russell help Saban win a national championship that year?
Yeah, because all Jamarcus did was buy up and just throw it down, 80 yards in the air. And that was also the time when LSU had, speedster wide receivers as well. So right. It was kind of like... But yeah, and then you can't tell me that in the state of Louisiana, you can't find one quarterback.
Yeah, that's like that. Or, just across the country, it's a powerhouse, school. It's a school that's known for football. Georgia Tech ain't known for basketball. I mean, Shaquille O'Neal went there, and Ben Simmons went there, but that is a football school. You should be able to either find a quarterback in the state of Louisiana or even across the country.
Somewhere in Louisiana, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, somewhere. And it's not as though the SEC isn't a plethora of quarterbacks. I mean, if you look at some of the, Alabama finds quarterbacks, seemingly just, who's that guy? Oh, and he's just, a fifth stringer at Alabama, and he ends up winning, two national championships. There are quarterbacks down there. That's on recruiting in order to find those guys. You got to be able to do your job as a recruiter and find these quarterbacks.
Right.
That's essentially all they need. They have the running back. Most years they have good targets as a wide receiver tight end. You have a pretty decent offensive line. Like you said earlier, it's a quarterback league.
So, keep going.
Of course, we have to mention Coach Campbell and Iowa State upset over Oklahoma and Norman and planting the flag at the 50-yard line. Because, of course, you have to troll Baker Mayfield, who, let's just be honest, he's got to be out of the Heisman running. I hate to say it, but people are going to look at that loss and be like, really? That's a bad loss for Baker Mayfield. But back to Iowa State, we actually don't know what Matt Campbell can do. We know he's a good coach. We know that he has the ability to win the big games, be competitive in the big games.
Well, as long as it's not Northern Illinois, but yeah, you're right.
Well, I mean, even going back to that game in Columbus, I know people are going to be tired of me bringing it up, but I mean, that was a winnable game for us.
But he wasn't the head coach then. It was still Beckman. He was the offensive coordinator.
I mean, at that point, I didn't think about Beckman. Beckman was already. But I mean, just Campbell has been in positions where he's been in the big games, and so he's not going to back down from anyone. And of course, the process. He preached it when he was in Toledo, and now he's preaching out. He just trusts the process. Once he gets his guys in, it's going to be a world of difference. And as we saw, that team is good enough to make some noise in the next couple of years.
Yeah, if he can get the resources, but you're right, he's kind of iffy on the big games. I'll tell you this. Yeah, he could beat the Arkansas. Yeah, he beat Iowa State his final year here at, when they came here, and then he made it close the year before. But the problem is this. I mean, he got the big win against Oklahoma, but what is he going to do in November? That's when the team started to falter. What is he going to do when you get key injuries? Now, obviously, their quarterback had to leave, I believe, for medical reasons. Their starting quarterback they've been having all season. He did get the win in Oklahoma. But the rap sheet on Matt Campbell is he's a great coach. He knows how to rally the troops. And when he went to Iowa State, I thought maybe that might be a bad spot for him because, where is he going to get the resources? Is he going to always be that 500 team? I mean, Iowa State, me and you can agree, was atrocious through the Big 12 for years. I think he can get them to a 500 or a little bit better. But then people are going to start getting tired of that. How many 7-5 seasons or 8-4 seasons are people going to tolerate there in Iowa State? Because they're going to believe, because he can make you a believer that they could be winners. My question is, can Matt Campbell get them to be elite where they're getting 10 to 11 wins per season and maybe sniffing the playoff? Only time will tell. But then the question also is, with Matt Campbell, what is he going to do in November? I mean, like I said, it's October right now, but, you know, I can look up some of the, you know, the Iowa State schedule here, but, you know, I'm real kind of iffy about Matt Campbell. I love him. I want to see him do good, but like I said, now you're playing Kansas, then you got Texas Tech, TCU. You know, is he going to be able to beat TCU on October 28th? Baylor, you know, you got them on the 18th, and then Kansas State on the 25th. So right now, beating Oklahoma is great. Kansas is next. That should be a win. But versus TCU, can he get another one? That's going to be the question. And then usually he does drop something in November. His November games are at West Virginia. Can he beat Oklahoma State? That's a home game. Then at Baylor, then at Kansas State. So he's got two more games to prove himself, TCU and Oklahoma State. I think if he can split those, then I'll give him a good job. But he can't go 0-2.
Well, and I think it's also, if we look at the resources that he has in Iowa State, like, Iowa State isn't a hotbed for football. Like,
it's not.
So, I mean,
that's what
you
I mean.
Have to take that into account, considering, like, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, TCU. Like, in recent years, those have been schools, Oklahoma State and TCU, that have been, like, sniffing the playoff top 10, top program.
Yeah, if he
I mean, those are obviously going to be tough.
If he can get them to, like, the TCU status, then I will say he has done an excellent job. But the problem he's in is he's, one, like you said, Iowa State's not a hotbed for football. Two, you're battling with your rival up north, which is Iowa. And that's another thing, too. You know, what are you going to do with the rivals? I mean, yeah, great win against Oklahoma. I think he really needed that. I think so they can start having confidence in him, because last season, you know, they're teetering a little bit. But, like, for instance, they lost to Iowa again for the Cy-Hawk. You know, that's something that, you know, alumni base and everything, they want to win those. You know, you lost to Texas 17-7. You know, once again, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, when you get to that big time, Oklahoma, great win, but you got to also beat Texas. You can't just beat up on the little guys, you know. You know, you can't beat up on University of Northern Iowa, you know, UNI, you know, great. Akron, great. You know, you don't want to lose to one, but if you beat them, okay, whatever. You know, that's kind of like a catch-22. You got to start beating the Texas and the Oklahoma. So right now he's 1-1 in the big games. Hopefully he can keep the momentum going, beating Kansas. Then he's got a, you know, at number 24 right now, Texas Tech. Can he win that game? You know, it's going to be a battle. And like I said, at Iowa State, how are you going to get the recruits? I mean, you're battling Iowa. That's a cross-state rival. Then you got all the Big 12 you got to go against. Then think about it. You got some of the Big 10 guys coming in from Big 10 country, with Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State getting your kids. You know, it's going to be tough for Matt Campbell. I hope that he can get to maybe a TCU status, but for me, I just think that Iowa State, the best they're going to reach, their pinnacle, is probably going to be 9-3 and 8-4 seasons. And after a while, fans are going to expect more. And if he can't meet those criteria, they're going to let him go.
Well, and I think back to the recruiting, from a recruiting standpoint, primarily, he's really in a similar position as he was in Toledo. It was the big wins. It was the kind of big name victories that he was able to get that drew some of the other recruits from outside of our normal recruiting hotbeds, but even strengthening the recruits in those kind of hotbeds that we had been accustomed to operating in. But yeah, like, as he wins, or even if he plays one, you said a couple of times before, recruits are going to see some of those close games and say, hey, I could be that missing key. And that's something that Coach Campbell preached. Like, you can be that missing piece for us. Like, you can be that guy that can make a difference to get us over the hump. And so, with a guy with the personality as a coach as Coach Campbell is, like, he's going to find a way to keep those recruits in state. It's just a matter of, can he get the big recruits from around the state, again, out of Big Ten, out of SEC, Big 12 country.
I kind of disagree with you, David, on the recruiting with Toledo. A lot of these kids that come to Toledo, I mean, they're going to be two or three star recruits. Obviously, the rankings can be wrong, and you you can get a kid that may be ranked a 2- or 3-star recruit and it really should be a 4- or 5-star recruit, but because of whatever publications are wrong, whatever. Not to mention some of those other kids, too, that come to Toledo, they got a chip on their shoulder because, you know, the big schools didn't want to recruit them and they recruited their friend instead. So when they go in these big games, they got a lot to prove. Now that you're at, Iowa State, it's considered a bigger school. But at the same time, though, look who you're competing against. I mean, at Toledo, basically Toledo was competing against other MAC schools. And let's face it, Toledo is one of the better upper echelon MAC schools. And then a lot of times if you sprinkle in some kids that kind of get missed by Ohio State, you can always build a good football team. At Iowa State, though, I mean, you're competing against the Big 12. I mean, let's face it, at Iowa State, if you want to compete with the big boys and be with Alabama's and compete in the playoffs, you're not going to really do it with 2- or 3-star recruits. I mean, at Toledo, if you want to be competitive and win a bowl game, and, you know, we know that Toledo will probably never be considered, you know, for the playoff. They'll probably get a New Year's Six, possibly. So, yeah, you can compile wins here, you know, and build your record. But at the big boy network or the big boy conference, you know, they're looking at a totally different outlook and plan. They want playoff. So, like I said, you can recruit the 2- or 3-star recruits like you were at Toledo, but you're not going to be sniffing the playoffs. That's one thing. You'll be competitive, but I don't think you'll sniff the playoffs, and that's what they're looking at, and I think that's the difference between Toledo and the Power Five. Here at Toledo, if you can get us to a big-name bowl game and win the conference, you're good. You know, basically in the bigger conferences, it's basically get us to the playoff. Well, that's when we want the big money. You know, if you get to a bowl game, oh, okay, that's great, but, you know, the big conferences don't get up for the bowl games anymore now, so I think that's a little bit of a difference.
Well, I mean, I don't think anyone in Ames is expecting national championship. Like, that's just crazy. Like, even if they were undefeated, like, there's still steps behind within the Big 12 in general. Just, like, it's going to take a lot more than just Matt Campbell and 5-star recruits and it's going to be a long road, and other teams will have to, like, fall off the map. But you never know.
You're right. I mean, but Iowa State, after a while, is going to, like I said, if they keep winning, they're going to want more. It's like feeding the beast, you know. Here at Toledo, like I said, you could feed. Now, obviously, Toledo doesn't want to be like Eastern Michigan or Ball State status or, you know, Owen whatever. No, they don't want that. But at the same time, here at Toledo, you know, if we just get to a bowl game and compete for a MAC title, we're happy. You know, at Iowa State, they're going to be wanting to compete for Big 12 titles. And then I bet you a lot of them now think that because we beat Oklahoma, now we can start being with the big boys. They're going to start wanting to be one in playoffs after a while. I mean, like I said, 8-4, 9-3 gets stale after a while at the bigger programs compared to probably at Toledo.
Yeah.
All right, keep going.
All right, Ned. My last winner, Deshaun Watson. Just, like, I know people are going to say, you know, he's competing with the rookie of the year with Kareem Hunt, and rightfully so. Those two have been, like, dynamic rookies. But tell me again why he fell so far in the first round. Like, the more I see him play in live action, the more I'm questioning all the teams that picked quarterbacks in front of him, including the Bears, including the Chiefs.
Oh, hold up the brakes on that, David. I mean, we still got to give Mitchell Trubisky a chance, which he'll be playing on Monday night. So, I mean, you know, right now Deshaun is coming out hot, but let's see how he finishes when teams actually get some film on him. So let's not, you know, jump the gun just yet.
I mean, Deshaun Watson is just special. Like, and it's a shame that he was robbed, you know, Heisman. I was the Heisman the past 2 years, but I mean, you don't get invited to New York if you're not good. But
true,
this kid's good. He's a diaper dandy. He's, you know, one of the, like, in terms of rookie quarterbacks making an impact, it's been a long while since I've seen a quarterback be this dynamic out the gate. And now to the losers. I mentioned we talked about Ole Miss and LSU, just the SEC in general this past week. I mean, Tennessee just laying goose. Tennessee is really not a good football program. They may have a ranking just because the voters, want to throw someone in there and they still say the SEC is good, but they're not good. Honestly, Florida isn't good either, if I'm just going to be honest. I mean, mention LSU, Ole Miss, Vanderbilt. The SEC is basically Alabama, Georgia, and then not even falling off the face of the earth. That conference is so top-heavy. Thanks to Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next loser, Louisville. I feel bad for Lamar Jackson because it seems night and day last year to this year. And just the way that Louisville was just dominated by NC State on the road. Granted, NC State is apparently a sneaky good team all of a sudden. I'm honestly going to say I didn't expect to see that happen. But that Louisville offense just looks so out of whack. And Lamar Jackson's strength, which was making plays with his feet, being able to scramble. He has no time in that pocket. Zero. And he's getting hit a lot more. He's taking a lot more physical damage just in pocket because he doesn't have time to throw it away in most cases, much less scramble. But yeah, that Louisville's taking a deep decline in ways that I am shocked to see.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. And by the way, I mean, obviously Jackson's not going to be an NFL quarterback. He'll probably be a receiver. But keep going.
Third one, I'm going to mention Mike Glennon. Just I understand you're giving the rookie Mitch Trubisky playing time, but I mean, how Mike Glennon just keeps getting paid. He robbed the Chicago Bears of so much money, and he's just
But you can't rob the willing. I mean, they gave it to him. They should have known better than that. I still scratch my head at why they gave him that guaranteed, those guaranteed 2 years of what is it, $18 million a year or something like that. I understand he's a stopgap quarterback, but when he's a stopgap quarterback, you don't pay him franchise quarterback money. I didn't understand that one.
Yeah, just, and the way that he's looking, yeah. In the record book, he's going to go down as having been in Pittsburgh. But really, that was Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen. Mike Glennon just looks bad as a quarterback. And another quarterback, Jay Cutler. He's, again, robbing the willing. Jay Cutler just doesn't care. He's out there with a cigarette most plays. He's just screw it. I'm just here to get paid. I'm going to stand out here. In the first half, he was 5 of this week's game for the Dolphins. In the first half, 6 of 11 for 27 yards and an interception. That's in a half. Usually you get 27 yards on a drive before going 3 and out. It's crazy. So yeah, Colin Kaepernick, who came out and said he's willing to play for whoever he'll stand. He just wants to play. What does that say for players now? They're just somebody's got to pick him up.
Someone's saying that might be fake news. We're going to have to confirm that. But I heard that might have been fake news that he didn't really actually say that. I still have to look that up a little bit later and probably get back to you on that next week. But you got about a minute and a half left in the segment, David. Final thoughts and analysis.
All right. Real quick, winners and losers. We're going to go Michigan offense. I mean, it's a pouring down raining, and you're going to throw the ball. Not really smart from the khaki. You got to know your personnel. Got to know the game plan. Got to know the situation. Got to just run it. And the last loser, Jay Feely. And for those that were at the Glass Bowl for the homecoming game, it was during the broadcast that Jay Feely was calling. It was Rockets were up 3-0. Eastern Michigan were looking to tie with the field goal kick.
And they missed. He missed, and he said they made it.
Yeah, Jay Philly said he was made and like went into commercial break saying, you know, he's Michigan tied up. And I'm like, nope.
Even the scoreboard even said 3-0. Yeah, he completely – yeah, Jay Philly, well, that's the reason why they put those guys in those games. You know, you got to work on your craft. I listened to basically – I hate to say this. I listened to 88.3 with Isaac and Reed. I thought their broadcast was phenomenal, especially for student radio. I know, don't sleep on us. I mean, I understand that I'm the sports – I used to be the former sports director, and I might be a little biased, but – I'll admit, yeah, David, the broadcast of the Rockets and Eastern Michigan game on CBS Sports Network was a little bit to be desired, I would say the least, and it was pretty bad.
I mean, at this point, just put the student radio guys in the professional booth. I mean,
yeah, at least
if we mess up, it's like, hey, we're student radio, you know, we're not former athletes who have spent our careers, getting massive millions and millions of dollars being a professional.
Yeah, like I said, that is pretty bad. We're going to have to end this segment, David. We'll have Frank Vaster coming in as we'll talk a little bit more college football. Now, you guys had a real good debate about Michigan and Michigan State. Talk about a little bit about the Little Brother Bowl. You ready for that, David?
Oh, it was a fun game, all right. Yeah. I mean, if you were a Michigan State fan. I would say it was a fun game.
Right. Then later on, we'll talk a little bit about Cam Newton and his comments about females and them knowing routes. But it's an overall perspective for me, though. I mean, as far as being in the media and stuff like that, it's just starting to think it get a little out of hand. We'll also have David the Man of God Harris' thoughts on that as well. So, got more stuff coming up next here on 88.3 WTs. After further review, next, though, we'll talk a little bit about the Little Brother Bowl with Frank Vashner.